Elul is a month-long holiday, or challah month, that marks the end of one Jewish year and helps to transition into the beginning of a new one. Traditionally, it is a month of introspection, contemplation, and personal growth. Untraditionally, or at least less traditionally, Elul Unbound is a digital initiative offering up a wide variety of avenues for experimenting over the course of this month. Sign up to join Elul Unbound's email list and learn more about all of Elul Unbound's offerings by heading to judaismunbound.com/ELUL. This is a special bonus edition of Judaism Unbound. Elul Unbound number 20, Spiraling Out. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Lex Rofberg.
And I'm Wendy Bernstein Lash.
We have reached our 20th Elul Unbound bonus episode since we launched in 2018. That's wild. It's pretty cool. I'm really excited about it. But we have business today. We have things to discuss. Before we do, little reminders, we've been having amazing Zoom gatherings. It's been so fun to connect with people all around the world around this Elul moment, around this on-ramp into the holidays of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We invite you to come these coming two Fridays to our final two. It's been a great time. And we, even if you haven't come to the first two, you're more than welcome to come to our remaining gatherings. We also have our Elul Unbound email list, which has been bumping. Thanks to all of you who have sent us notes with your ideas, your questions, your visions, your comments on the different things that we've sent out. You can keep on receiving those. Or if you haven't yet, you can sign up at judaismunbound.com/Elul, E-L-U-L, for our email list. Last but not least on the opportunities front is Wendy Bernstein Lash, who is here with us today, is also teaching a mini course in the Unyeshiva. You can still sign up. It already began, but you've only missed one of its meetings. It's three meetings, and you can still sign up and watch the first recording back. So please do that at judaismunbound.com/classes if you're still interested in registering. And now for today's episode. We have been living a little bit in wordplay mode, or at least drash land. We've been living in the world of Jewish interpretation where we're finding deep connections in specific words. And so we're doing more wordplay today. And today's wordplay is not so much, at least not to start, about Shana as year. It's about this use of Shana or Shinantam that comes up in our Shema prayer, which is, you know, a core part of liturgy and a core part of the Book of Deuteronomy. And Shinantam, Vishinantam Levanecha, it means to teach. And that's a really interesting thing. There's this idea that when you teach someone, I mean, and it's often translated, Vishinantam Levanecha, teach them diligently. That's how the, like, Debbie Friedman version of the Ve'ahavta goes, teach it diligently unto your children. The reason it's translated teach diligently, there's no word for diligently that's happening in the Hebrew. But shinantam, there's different words for teach. Shinantam is kind of like inculcate deeply. Teach something so deeply that it's like cycling multiple, like repeat with them. Because remember, teaching, we think of teaching today as a very, as a progressive kind of thing and a very interactive kind of thing. A long time ago, teaching was basically recitation. It was a teacher would say a thing and students would repeat after them. So vishinantam was like, may you sort of have your children repeat things, have them repeat this notion of God being one that comes from Shema. That's not how I think about teaching so much. I don't think it's just about people repeating my ideas. But I do think it's fascinating that there is a tie-in between the word for teaching and the word for a year, a cycle, a second occurrence. So, Wendy, I'd love to hear from you about that. How might we connect the layers of Shana, new year, Sheni, second happening, and Shinantam, teaching diligently?
First of all, I'm like a cycle nerd, if there's such a thing. I love cycles. I love spirals. I love the idea that we return, but we don't return to the same point. So we hit the Jewish calendar every year and we celebrate or we honor it. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, other holidays, Pesach, but we're not the same person. So we're returning in a different way. We've been transformed by our experience of that year. And yet here's the holiday And so I just think this idea of learning as an ongoing process, learning as a journey, is beautiful. And I also think about, like, there's book learning. Yes, maybe it meant when Vishinantan Levanecha was codified, repeat, repeat, repeat. But there's also embodied learning. Like, so there were people who were apprentices. Mm-hmm. And how do you learn to be a blacksmith? You do it and you do it over and you watch the master blacksmith and you learn by doing.
And that's the next sentence, right? When you lie down, or it's one of the next sentences. When you lie down, when you rise up.
Right. So this sense of knowing, learning is an ongoing process. And so therefore, seconds and we have thirds and fourths and fifths, which we'll be looking at in other years, maybe, are just the continuation of that first hit. Now we're going to deepen.
I like it a lot. And I want to take a second and talk about, I used to work at the Institute of Southern Jewish Life, and I would help craft curriculum. I would help craft the educational curriculum for students in different Sunday schools all around the Southern region. It was very, very cool. And the way that we structured our curriculum from early childhood all the way through eighth grade and to some extent high school around, I'm going to start by saying repetition. I don't mean that. I'm saying that because before I said, oh, Shinanta is just like, they're just repeating back stuff from the teacher. That's not the form of learning I really like. But there is a form of learning where you have certain content areas. And this is a notion called a spiral curriculum that is not just unique to the organization I worked for. It's used in many forms of education where you've got students that are traveling from a young age to an older age, and you want to cover certain things. But if you only teach about, you know, the U.S. government in 1 year of your entire upbringing, you're probably not going to have that great of a time of it. If you learn it in third grade, you'll have a third grade conception, but you won't have been at a place in your development where you could learn certain more sophisticated things. And so the way that a lot of schools organize, they don't do U.S. government every year of elementary school and middle school, but they'll do it, you know, in second or third grade. And then they'll come back a few years later. And the idea is a spiral, because if you picture what a spiral looks like, you start on the inside and you're like a small radius from the center. If the radius is the amount of sophistication, at a second or third grade level, you don't have a deep sophistication of what you can understand of the branches of government. Then you travel around the circle and you pass back towards the point that you were at before in the circle's rotation. You do a 360-degree turn, but you're like one or two levels out. And that's when you learn about the U.S. government with a sixth grade sophistication. And then you keep going. And then you might come back to it in ninth or 10th grade of high school. That's how a lot of our American education system works. And I think that that's Vishinantam. That is, we're repeating, right? But we're not just repeating the same rote sentences. We're repeating ideas and we're allowing ourselves to grow. And so my hope is that we can have that sensation when we experience our second year of the cycle, that we can notice something we did last year for the first time, maybe. But then try to level it up this year. Try to do it at level two, at level bet, to quote last week. That's kind of how I'm sitting with it. And I think that it ties to this idea of a spiral, because again, just physically, I'm not just being metaphors. Like when you draw a spiral, it crosses past that 360 degree point when you started a number of times. And those are the chances for us to check in and grow to a next level, to a next radius.
I'm thinking of also a three-dimensional spiral, like if it was 3D chess and you had a spiral on it. So you talked about leveling up, and I'm thinking about depth, so that the height of it, but there's also the breadth of it. And so another way to level up is, what's beneath the surface that I didn't see the first time? It can go either way. It can go like, let's intensify this. Maybe I can do it more. Maybe I could do it with more intention. Or maybe I could actually uncouple it and see if there's something else that speaks to me that's completely new. You know, like deconstructed food, right? We take a tamale and I'm not going to make a tamale. I'm going to like have a little corn over here, and I'm going to have this here, and I'm going to have that there. I'm kind of a cooking show nerd too. So, but we can do that with Judaism. We can do that with our spiritual practice. We can do that with our holidays. It's like, how can I uncouple it, open it up, and find something new that I wouldn't have seen if I kept it all the way that it was first done or the way that I first learned about it? Let me unpack it.
I think that's a great point. And I'm thinking just like, what are rituals that I do regularly? I might not do them every day. I might not do them every week. But like, let's say lighting Shabbat candles. I will be the first to admit, I do not think that I have done almost anything or had any kind of kavanah that deeply has layered anything new on my Shabbat candle lighting experience that my wife and I and sometimes our cat do. I think it would be really great for me and with my wife to be like, okay, we've been lighting candles together for a long time. There is a way. I don't think it's gotten rote. It's still beautiful. I don't mean to say that things that don't change can't be beautiful, but I think like we could layer something in, right? Okay, what is it to light candles in August together? What is it to light candles in September? What is it to do it in October, November, especially as light gets shorter and shorter and we're noticing and cherishing light a little more in that part of the year? What gets different? What's different on a week-to-week basis when it aligns with a certain moment in our lives or people visiting from out of town or whatever? Like, what is the new layer that adds that level up piece to Shabbat candle lighting? What's so funny is I think Hanukkah actually is one of our few holidays where we do this. Because like literally we add, we have one candle, then we have two, then we have three. You are, if you want to talk about leveling up, it is the most straightforward kind of leveling up you could have. Now, do we always process like deep meaning of what that next layer means? Not so much. I think it would be great on Hanukkah to say, what is it to experience this second night as a second night and not just a night? So I'm excited about applying this sort of spiral curriculum to my own life where I can look out and say, okay, I've done something a while, but I can bring an added layer to it.
Yeah. And I'm also thinking about Hanukkah. There are a fair number of people who follow the tradition where they light all of them on the first night and they take away a candle. And so maybe it's how we set the intention. We do the same thing. It might be setting a different intention this time, but doing the same practice. We're revisiting it, we're opening it up, but we're not repeating it. We're not doing something that feels like it's just repetition. How do I actually maybe even create more space in it? We've talked about this in the past, like liminal time, the time where we're doing something and like time seems to open up and stop and we're not noticing the passage of time and it feels very spacious. Some people get that when they meditate, some people when they're doing art or doing a sport or running or something like that. What would it mean to open up our rituals or our intention and see what comes when we give it some space? Like, what if you just sat there with the candles for a while and didn't light them?
Yeah. No, that's a great point. I mean, I've started whirling a little bit about my own struggle. This is a very strange thing. My wife and a lot of friends of mine and a lot of people in my life, they'll watch their favorite movies over and over and over again. I rarely do. I have like a couple, but I've never really been somebody to watch stuff again. And I say that not as if I'm better than anybody else or worse than anybody else. It's just I sometimes struggle to find the newness in something I've already experienced. Maybe that's part of why I'm so invested in like not using the same melodies all the time. Like doing radically new things. Because like if I do things that are even close to the same, I feel like too patterned and too routine. But I'm going to push myself this Elul, I think. I'm going to watch some things. I'm going to watch some reruns of things. And it might be reruns of things that I really cherish. I might try to mix in some things that I don't even think of as like my favorite shows. Just because I'm kind of curious what will happen. If I'm focused on that kavanah, that intention of like unearthing some new level there, I think I probably can, but I think sometimes I'm not actively trying to do that. And so it's not, nothing really is produced there. So I'm going to play with the art of the rerun, this Elul, as we try to think about that spirit of doing things a second time and how the second time need not mean rote. We'll have to see how that goes, Wendy. You'll have to check in on me and see how that goes.
Yeah, I think my experience is that there are people who love doing things over and over again, and there are people who love the new, and maybe we all just need to mix it up and do whatever is what we don't normally do and see what we might discover. It might be boring, but it might be that because you're doing it a second time, you're not having to think about it, and your mind goes off and something else happens, or you notice something in a scene. This happened to me in COVID, where we were walking the same walk, my husband and I, every day, because we knew how long it was. We'd walked it before, but we walked it to walk it. Now it was like our only pastime, I think, and getting out of the house. And so we said, oh, look at that house. And oh, look at that tree. And wow, they did this. And you also get to meet your neighbors who you don't get to meet as much because everybody was out walking. But it was such an awareness to me of how doing something over and over again, you can actually see different things that you didn't see in the first time you did it.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And the last tie-in I'm going to bring, and for those who are real deep cut fans of the podcast, you'll know I'm a big fan of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is the first segment of rabbinic Judaism, textual rabbinic Judaism. It was written a little more than 1,800 years ago. And Mishnah, it ties to this notion, it sort of weaves this all together. It ties to the notion of teaching, vishinantam, to mishnify, so like to repeatedly educate, to deeply educate, diligently educate someone. Mishnah is a set of six big books. Each of those books contains a lot of sub-tractates, and each of those tractates contains a lot of chapters. It's a huge amount of text. It's called the Mishnah because it's, you could read it as like the second, that which is sheni, mishnah, sheni. You could also hear it as something that is meant to be revisited and revisited. And whenever you conclude a section of Talmud, or I've done this one with Mishnah, you generally say, I will return to you. You actually like personify it. You like speak to the text and you say, I'm going to return to you and you'll be returned to me. Hadranalach, hadrachalan. That's the classic notion. There's something so beautiful about that. And it's a push for me because with Jewish texts, I do it more. I'm more into reruns on that front. Psychoanalyze as you will. But I like it more when it's Jewish stories than when it's other kinds of stories. But I'm really excited the rest of this month to soak into that spirit of revisiting, of really experiencing deeply that difference between teaching and teaching diligently. I'm looking forward to that.
I think that's such a beautiful intention. And it reminds me when we were in the throes of lockdown and COVID, how I said, I'm gonna hold on to this. And now when we walk, I'm like, Bob, I got to get back. I got a phone call. So I need to revisit that intention of the beauty of allowing something to unfold because I don't have to think about it so much. So that's going to be a great intention for me to take in for the next few weeks and even beyond Elul.
This has been so great. It's been great reconnecting, Wendy. See what we did there? Wow, wow, wow. Theme came in even in the little passing language as we close. Wow. I am thrilled that each of us has emerged with a great intention for the rest of this month of Elul and beyond. And tell us yours. Send us a note. If you've got new ideas, new visions, new rituals, old rituals you've done deeper, old ideas, old commentaries, whatever you've got related to Elul, we want to hear it. And you can be in touch with us at Elul, E-L-U-L, at JudaismUnbound.com. That will go to both me and Wendy and also our wonderful Micah, who we met in our first bonus episode of this year of Elul. And she is also one of our co-shepherds of this month together. And like I said, we hope that you'll come to our Zoom gatherings. You can learn all of this at JudaismUnbound.com/ELUL. And mostly, it's been fun hanging with you this last little bit. And we hope to talk with you a little more in our final episode of the month this coming week. But with that, this has been Judaism Unbound.